Hello and welcome to the Around the Nation podcast for the end of week one of the 2010 Division III football season. I'm Pat Coleman.
And I'm Keith McMillan.
The time of the week where we run down the week that just happened in Division III football. I know there are a handful of you out there, even outside of the NESCAC, who haven't played a regular season game yet, a game that counts anything but a scrimmage, but we did have about 100 games that did take place this past week. And, you know, Keith, I think that we probably wouldn't be remiss to say that the I don't know if it was the biggest surprise, but the Willamette-Wisconsin-Stevens Point game was a game, first of all, that just, I think, showed guts in scheduling that early in the season, two ranked teams. But, you know, then the way that, you know, Stevens Point jumped out to the early lead and Willamette had no problem playing from behind, clearly.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing about that is I would have expected it to go the other way rather than having Stevens Point score the first 14 and then Willamette score 33 in a row. You know, when you go against a different type of offense, and for those of you who aren't familiar, Willamette runs that fly offense, which is fairly unique to them and unique in Division III. You know, when you go against a different type of offense, it may take you a quarter or two to get familiar with it defensively and to sort of adjust and come up with an in-game game plan on how to stop it. And you would think that the team unfamiliar with the offense, Stevens Point, would be the one that has the trouble early and then sort of gets it together.
And it was completely the other way around. And Willamette ended up the day rushing for 277 yards. They had nine different players touch the ball, as they have been when they've been good over the past several years, spreading the ball around, a couple players with 10 carries, a couple players with six. And a passer who was 6 of 9 for 67 yards, which is, I think, one of the things, that has kind of separated Willamette over the past few years. The years that they've been good, it's when they've had someone who can, you know, credibly pass the ball.
Yeah, and when it, you know, in an offense that's based on the run and based on spreading the ball around, you know, defensive coordinators are always trying to make teams one-dimensional, and sometimes teams make themselves one-dimensional by only being good at one thing or only having the personnel to really run one thing. And when you have a team that likes to run as much as Willamette does, when they can just mix that pass in and sort of lull you to sleep, run, and then have somebody that can throw effectively, you know, it does give them that other dimension. And like you said, Pat, the years they've been good.
We're basically looking at this game as the consensus number two team out of the Northwest Conference versus the consensus number two team out of the WEAC. And they both came in to the week, very evenly matched in the poll in our top 25. And of course, Willamette runs away to the 33-14 victory. And, in week one in Division I college football season that's going on right now, if you guys are picking up this podcast on Monday when we release it, they're talking about what could basically be a national title elimination game going on Monday night between Boise State and Virginia Tech. And in Division III, you know, we don't really have elimination games per se because almost everybody can still play for an automatic bid, but this game still had plenty of playoff implications.
Yeah, at least we think so. We think it does at this point. And what sort of becomes important in both of these conferences, in the Northwest Conference and in Wisconsin, is that you have pretty much a clear-cut favorite. Obviously, the defending national champion in Wisconsin Whitewater. And then Linfield, you know, the national finalist or national semifinalist that pushed Whitewater, you know, to the fourth quarter last year. That was, you know, a 17-14 game or something like that, 14-10 in the fourth quarter last year. So you have two of the strongest teams in the country, two teams in the top five in our poll, as clear favorites in those two conferences. And so, you know, you want to see, are these both conferences that are going to have a strong second team that's going to be a playoff contender? And as you mentioned, Pat, the automatic bid is still on the table, but once you get that one loss, anything, two losses is shaky. You know, we've seen years, you know, depending on how the field shakes out nationally, where there's been three and four runners up that get in with a couple losses, and then there's years, and last year was one of them, where 9-1 teams get left at home by not winning their own conference.
You know, Keith, we talked pretty extensively during the playoffs in the first couple weeks last year about the statement, I guess, that the NCAA and the committee made about, the benefits of a strong schedule. They did not really benefit too many teams that took a step up in strength of schedule, and a two-loss team with a really strong schedule might not get in. Do you think at some point that if this continues, teams might go away and we might not see games like these being played in non-conference action?
You know, you can say that maybe has already started to happen when you look at some of the teams that the top 25 teams played on Saturday. And, you know, and you hate to call specific teams out, but there are, I mean, contenders, national, you know, teams that are in the threat to go deep in the playoffs, let's say, every year. Teams that are a threat to win their conference every year, playing teams that haven't won a conference game in years, or have won one conference game, or you know, team that you know is not going to be it's not on your same level. And I know it's hard for certain teams to schedule games, but I think there it's pretty clear when you looked at the top 25, there were maybe four or five really highly ranked teams that certainly didn't go out of their way to schedule anybody really important that would give them a good challenge in week one. And then you have the teams like Central that you know, takes on a team from Wisconsin and Oshkosh. You have Hardin-Simmons and Whitworth and Willamette and Stevens Point playing each other. And a little bit of that is you know, by nature of the island that they're on, they're sort of stuck with the number of teams they had to choose from and being able to play against. But certain teams, you know, just they didn't exactly challenge themselves in week one.
I don't think we could say that necessarily about, let's say, our defending national champion, Wisconsin Whitewater. Adrian comes to town. Adrian gets shut out 35-0. But, you know, just for Whitewater to have a Division III team to play outside of the conference is a moral victory for scheduling everywhere.
Yeah, and especially, you know, Wisconsin has struggled in recent years, being able to get other D3 teams to play them. It's a tough situation that they're in, because just in the state of Wisconsin, you know, there's the big state school in Madison, and then there's all the other state schools that are all D3 teams, and then there's D3 privates that I think sometimes feel like it's not a level playing field when you know, you have schools that can get that financially, I think, are competing on a different level. They're offering, you know, you can come to school for $8,000 or $10,000, and then you got the privates who are charging $25,000 and $30,000. It's there's you're not exactly recruiting from the same pool of kids, and I think they take it out on them a little bit when it comes to scheduling.
When I was at St. Norbert this past weekend, the people around the program, not necessarily coaches and that, but you saw St. Thomas get off the bus for their walkthrough on Friday. They got off the bus and they had the size of a WEAC team, and that's the sort of team that St. Norbert has played WEAC teams in the non-conference schedule in the past. And as you know, I think it would be fair to say they've not had a whole lot of success. They've been competitive at times, but they've gotten blown out by Whitewater, as now many teams have over the recent years. I hear what you're saying about the disparity for Whitewater against Adrian. One of the interesting things on Saturday was that Whitewater was replacing a four-time All-American place kicker in Jeff Schebler, and they really struggled the first two and a half, three quarters in the kicking game before they changed kickers and things turned around a little bit.
You know, you joke about kickers sometimes, but that's an important part of your game when it comes to scoring points, especially early in the season when your offense is sort of still getting it together a little bit and you maybe don't finish drives. You want to be able to put three on the board instead of zero. You know, if you can't put the seven, you at least got to be able to get 3 points. And there's a big disparity in Division III with the level or the quality of kicker in terms of how far you can go out distance-wise. You know, Pat, you and I have seen games where teams, you know, if they don't get inside the 30 or the 25, they're not going to be able to attempt the field goal. And then there are other teams, you know, as we know on Saturday, you know, kicked a couple of 50-yarders. So there's a big disparity in the kicking game. And for Whitewater, a team that's, you know, planning to defend its national championship, they would like to be able to get
Matt
that
Blanchard
together.
Matt Blanchard had
as
a good debut, his first start as a Whitewater quarterback, and they did end up pulling away to a 35-0 victory. It's just that it was scoreless after the first quarter and 12-0 at the half. That's our number one team. Number two, Mount Union, was off this past week. Third-ranked Wesley, an interesting story for them in going down to Christopher Newport, coming away with a big win, but maybe losing a key piece to a team that I think could have had some legitimate title hopes, national title hopes, that is.
Oh yeah, I mean they were right in the mix, you know, just like Linfield was with Whitewater. Wesley was in that game in the fourth quarter last season, and we continue to harp on that because that's sort of part of the narrative of everybody thinks because it's been five national championship games in a row with Mountain Union and Whitewater that nobody else has a chance, and there are clearly other teams with a chance, and Wesley's one of them. And they got off to a good start on Saturday with the 34-6 victory against Christopher Newport. But if Shane McSweeney is hurt as bad as it sounds like he is, he's the starting quarterback for Wesley and has been for about a year and a half now. That could be a big. It could put a big burden on them, and we don't want to say that, you know, that knocks them completely out of contention, because it's so hard to tell how good Justin Sotolari could be. You know, he was 17 of 31 on Saturday passing, replacing Shane McSweeney. But the thing that Shane McSweeney brings to the game is that toughness and that, you know, that ability to run and make a play out of nothing. And that's something that's not necessarily in every quarterback.
Justin Sotolari got a little bit of playing time last year, 18 to 31 passing. You know, I don't even know what to say at this point. You're bringing a guy in off the bench who, you know, now obviously if he is the quarterback for the rest of the season, you've got a lot of practice time to get everything straight for him before the playoffs start. But of course, there's a long way to go to get to that point too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's maybe more of a mental hurdle for the quarterback himself, but for the guys around him just to buy in and to feel. You never, when you lose a player, you feel, oh man, I thought we had a good team this year. When you lose a key guy, you lose your quarterback, it's just going to take a little bit of time for everybody to feel the same way they felt about the season. If they felt like, man, this is the year that maybe we turn the corner, we have all our pieces in place, and then you lose a guy potentially for the whole season. You know, it's a tough mental hurdle for the players to sort of feel like the season could still be everything they want it to be.
One other new name coming up for Wesley that you may hear more as the season progresses, Brandon Wright, 14 carries for 70 yards and 2 touchdowns, and also 2 receptions for 51 yards and a score as well for the Wolverines, as they did win their opener by beating Christopher Newport 34-6. You know, that's a team that that lost its big-time quarterback. Now, a team that had its big-time quarterback and had him for the entire game on Saturday night and really, really struggled on offense was Monmouth, down at 20-0 and ended up, losing badly at Wartburg. And to be honest with you, you know, this was a team, Keith, with Alex Tanney returning, I think, D3Football.com, for example, along with a lot of other people, expected them to kind of just pick up where they left off, and it did not really work out for them in the opener.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you can bring back your star quarterback or any of your star players on offense, but if you don't have the offensive line in front of them, you know, it's a little bit of an adjustment, and it's not the same exact offense. You know, it's easy for us to fall into the trap of seeing the big name back and thinking, oh, well, they just bring everything back, and really, Monmouth was replacing a couple of their offensive linemen, and it showed on Saturday. And part of it, too, is of course, Wartburg is a program, that's always prided itself on playing good defense. And clearly, you know, they had a big game on Saturday, held the Scots to 3 of 16 on third down conversions, and got that big interception. But Garrett McGrain returned at 51 yards for a touchdown in the fourth quarter, at a point in the game where maybe Monmouth was thinking they could get back into it, maybe make a late run, you know, put that game away. It's that's a big that's obviously, you know, our big top 25 upset of week one, but it's a big game now, because now you look again, you start to wonder, is Wartburg going to contend in the IIAC?
And we got to wonder about Monmouth now. Monmouth last year lost in the first round of the playoffs at home. You know, now if they run the table in the Midwest Conference, which they still very well could, they'll be 9-1. They'll almost undoubtedly be sent on the road. You know, the way the West bracket is, they could be sent on the road to, you know, somewhere like the number one seed or the number two seed, or they could be sent to Whitewater. They could be sent to someone like St. Thomas or St. John's. I think we all know they won't be sent to Linfield because not in the first round. That would be that wouldn't fit the NCAA's budget. But almost anything else, it's a really long road ahead now for them.
People in Division 1A talk about their every week is a playoff week because they don't have playoffs at the end. Hey, we have playoffs at the end in Division 3, and you still have to be consistently good. You have to win. Every loss costs you something. You know, Monmouth can certainly run the table in its conference and get into the playoffs. But yeah, if you're on the road in the West, you're not going to draw a good matchup.
We're going to stick in the West for a minute. We did touch briefly on St. Thomas, St. Norbert. St. Thomas went out there and got a 40-7 victory. This is still a step up from last year's schedule where they opened with McAllister, but St. Norbert clearly struggled and had some problems in this game. But for St. Thomas, I think the thing I come away from this game seeing is, one, Ben Wartman was exactly as good as he was last year. Picked up right where he left off. Got dinged up a little bit. Set out for basically almost the entire second quarter. But I think the question with St. Thomas is, I'm not sure that they have the quarterback that's going to make them a national title contender. On Saturday, you know, last year they'd kind of gone back and forth between Dakota Tracy and Greg Morse, and both of those guys are still around this year. Tracy looked clearly to be the better of the two. On Saturday, I'm just not sure that either one of them is a national championship style quarterback. And I'm thinking back about, you know, the guys who have won national championships over the past few years, and if I'm thinking back, you know, 5, 6, 7 years now, Danny Jones was probably the least effective passing quarterback out of that group, but he, you know, and a lot of that based on having a bad Stag Bowl in a cold, wet evening. But you know, it takes, you know, no matter what else you have around you, you still got to have a pretty good quarterback to beat Mount Union or Whitewater or Linfield or any of the other teams that you have to beat at that level nationally.
Yeah, and even before we go that far down the line, you know, you got St. Thomas in a conference with St. John's and in a conference with Bethel, you know, two teams that are always in or hanging around the top 25. So for St. Thomas, you know, a team that comes in certainly highly ranked and highly respected based on what they were able to accomplish last season and the way they built the program really over the past few years since Glenn Caruso's taken over, there's going to be a lot of us. We'll be keeping a close eye on everything they do, and you know, it's not to sound down on them. Obviously, that's an impressive win in week one. Anytime you win your first game 40-7, that's a good thing. But you beat a team like St. Thomas, which is a consistently you know, playoff caliber team in that West region, and to be able to do it by rushing, you know, for 256 yards, and holding St. Norbert to 196 yards of total offense. I think those are two things, you know, every coach will tell you, you want to be able to run the ball and you want to be able to play good defense. So, you know, regardless of St. Thomas' limitations at quarterback, and Dakota Tracy did have a nice day, of course, in the opener, rushed for 81 yards and two touchdowns in addition to Ben Wartman's nice day. You know, St. Thomas looks like to be, at least from week one, they look like they have a pretty complete team.
I look forward to seeing you know, St. Thomas in week one, Mount Union in week two, because that's what's on my itinerary for this Saturday, and to get you know, those two teams back to back and see if you know, I can draw any conclusions whether or not they might make any sense or not. One other thing, you know, St. Norbert opened its brand new stadium on Saturday. I got a chance to drive by the stadium that it replaced, and it is indeed a massive upgrade by about 1,000-fold. So what St. Norbert has built is basically what the general standard has been in Division III for stadiums over the past few years. New concrete grandstand, about 2,500 or so permanent bleacher seats on the home side. The visitors' grandstand's not built yet. That's phase three. Phase two is the team locker room facility, which wasn't built yet either. So St. Norbert actually had worse accommodations at its home game than St. Thomas did. St. Norbert dressed on campus, took school buses over, and then did their halftime in the shed, in the garage. It's a large garage, but it's not, I assume that there was a whiteboard or something, but I did not get a chance to get in there. And then the other thing I mentioned, actually I think I did mention, but St. Thomas plays Wisconsin River Falls next week, and River Falls had a pretty good opener. They didn't win, but they certainly put up a good effort on the road.
Yeah, that was River Falls played Ohio Northern in one of the the opening game of the season on Thursday. And that game was 21-21 at one point. Ohio Northern, top 25 team, went on to win 35-21, which is a good sign for them. But Wisconsin, that whole entire conference pretty much took on the best teams around the Midwest and West. If you look at just who those schools played in week one, be it Ohio Northern, Central, Willamette, going down the line, even Adrian is a team that always contends in the MIAA. So they're fortunate to be able to play Division III teams in week one, but also another reason why we consider that the best conference, because they play the best and often beat the best.
I had a voter earlier on Sunday ask me about why Central didn't move down in the poll after struggling against what he termed a mediocre WEAC team, and I had to kind of respond back to him. I said, I'm not sure there's any such thing as a mediocre WEAC team.
Yeah, I mean, I think pretty much in that conference and in the CCIW, it's proven out year after year that the teams that finish, fourth, fifth, and sixth in that conference, often are capable of going 3-0 or 4-0 in non-conference games. And, finishing 4-6 or 5-5 or even 3-7 in one of those conferences doesn't mean you wouldn't be a 7-3 or 8-2 type of team in a lot of other conferences in Division III.
So good weekend for the WEAC. I think we could probably agree on that. Again, even though a couple of teams didn't win, they put up strong performances against ranked teams. Bad weekend in week one. Give a few conferences offhand. Liberty League comes to mind. So does the USA South. And for that matter, so does the MAC. Which one do you want to tackle first?
Yeah, in the Liberty League, the surprise was WPI losing to Salve Regina 6-3 in a game that, when you see a score like that, you wonder, was the weather a factor? And that wasn't the case. They just got beat by Salve, who's now coached by Bob Chesney, who came from Johns Hopkins, and that was a Final Eight team last season. So, they were good defensively last year, but for them to be able to turn that around so quickly was certainly a little bit of a surprise. And then St. Lawrence losing 33-3 to Ithaca, not getting their new coach's new regime off on a good foot. Over in the MAC, Delaware Valley beat Muhlenberg 27-7, I believe, and for a top 10-15 type of team, that's a nice win. You never knock a 20-point win, but what wasn't quite to the level of some of the other top 25 teams, but that was the only win for any MAC team. So certainly it was impressive. The shocker there was Lebanon Valley losing 42-28 to Gettysburg.
And then the USA South. Actually, I should say something about the Liberty League first before we move on, but I think one of the things that surprised me about the Liberty League was the game that they won was Merchant Marine beating Gallaudet at the last second. Merchant Marine playing at home at that, and I thought that that didn't necessarily reflect very well on the conference as a whole either.
No, but you know, a win is a win, and certainly Merchant Marine will take it heading into their rivalry game with Coast Guard next week.
They will certainly have the advantage of having one extra game under their belt going into that game for the Secretary's Cup in New London, Connecticut. To the USA South, then, I think you know, maybe the most disappointing probably was the loss by Averett to Hampton Sydney, and the final margin ends up a little closer than the reality was, in which Averett ends up losing 45-30, but put up a couple of late scores just to get the game to that point. And Hampton Sydney had that game well in hand, 23 points in the fourth quarter. In fact, for Averett, at one point they trailed 45-7.
Yeah, and 45-7, you know, is a tough one, and you know, it ended up being 45-30. And but there were blowouts all around in that conference. Just not a good week at all for the USA South. Christopher Newport, we mentioned, losing 34-6 to Wesley. Maryville lost to Huntington 54-3. And then Randolph-Macon went down to Methodist and won 54-14. And that doesn't bode well at all for the USA South, because those were sort of evenly matched teams in a lot of ways. And you know, Averett being one of the best, made potentially in the conference this season, going against one of the best in the ODAC and on down the line. And it just wasn't an impressive week for them. Although the 1-7 start for the conference did include a Super Bowl win by Greensboro over a rival Guilford.
Did you mention the Catholic Shenandoah game? I just wanted to throw that in there.
I did not.
Yeah, bad weekend for those three conferences. Pretty good weekend for the ODAC in terms of beating up on its southern Mid-Atlantic rival. It was a great weekend for Hanover with a surprise win against Center. You know, this is a team in Hanover which had had dominated the Heartland Conference for several years. You know, things started changing around the school. Legendary longtime coach left, and this is, you know, I guess year three of the rebuilding project, and a big freshman class is beginning to step up as juniors.
Yeah, and it's certainly good to see Hanover back. You know, that was a team that we wrote a little bit about in Kickoff, if you happen to read it. And on the flip side, though, Center we thought would be a contender in the SCAC, and that certainly can still happen. But to, you know, to get out to an early lead and then lose that first game of the season does test your confidence a little bit. And now when you look at the SCAC, you have, or the SCAC, as I always like to call it, you have Center and Millsaps getting off to start with a loss, and then Trinity struggling in that game at Howard Payne.
Yeah, Howard Payne, you mentioned earlier, Keith, a couple of 50-yard field goals. Those were off the foot of Mitchell Bailey, 50-yarder in the fourth quarter, 44-yarder in the second quarter, then a 50-yarder in overtime. You know, there are plenty of really good kickers who won't go their entire career in Division III football without making, or would go their whole career without making one 50-yarder. Howard Payne was really, I guess, basically kept in the game by those two. And Trinity, on the other hand, you know, you said it earlier, a win is a win, but I'm not sure you know, how much confidence necessarily Trinity takes away from something like this. It was, you know, a performance. You've given up that many points. We knew the defense was going to be a little bit young this year. The offense showed some signs of being all right, and they had a couple of guys who ran for 88 and 91 yards, and Robert Davidson had some decent numbers at quarterback. But Trinity, I'm sure, is going to be looking back at the video this week and finding a lot of things they want to work on.
Sure, but we go back to, you know, the bottom line is you know, you struggle, but you get out of week one with a win, and then, you know, yeah, you can go back and look at that video and see what you can correct. There were some teams that struggled, you know, as we went down those scores in week one and looked at how close Bridgewater and St. Vincent where, you know, St. Vincent, a program now in its fourth season that started off 1-29 in its first 30 games, pushing Bridgewater to the brink. Plymouth State needed some heroics to beat Castleton State, you know, a second-year program that didn't win a game last year. So, or I guess they did win, but they only beat Anna Maria, if I remember correctly. So, you know, some teams, they struggled in week one, and they're going to have to go back and get some things corrected, but they got out of week one with that victory.
On the flip side, you look at Occidental, and Occidental's a team, obviously, whose travails this preseason, shall we say, much publicized, with Dale Weedolf, the head coach, being basically benched for 4 weeks because of some unspecified violation. The school suspended him. He's not coaching in practice, not coaching in games. And I know that that came down while you and I were in the middle of doing kickoff. The predictions for the SCIAC had already been done. Our 1-238 ranking had already been compiled as well. And we both specifically looked at those first four games, and did we think that Occidental was going to maybe lose one of those four games now, or lose a game this season that they would have won if Coach Weedolf had been at the helm and nothing had happened. And we did end up flipping one game around. We decided that we thought just maybe Pomona Pitzer would beat Occidental in their conference game later this season. I'm not sure I really saw Menlo coming, but I guess the question with Menlo is, now that they're not Division III anymore and they can offer scholarships, who's on the roster and what kind of team is that this year?
Yeah, and that's certainly a concern, because it's now a they may have different standards, and Menlo's it was a very, very tiny school by Division III standards, so it makes sense for them to do anything they can do to increase enrollment. On the other hand, though, that's not a good loss. I mean, there's no such thing as a good loss, but I mean for Occidental, it's not good for their psyche to lose to a team that they think they should beat. But also, you know, you have to believe when their coach was suspended for 4 weeks that they said, okay, we're going to hold it together. You know, we bring it. You have it, your interim coach coming from within the program, of course, and you try to rally everybody together and say, hey, you know, we'll keep things on track until Coach Weedolf gets back. Let's win one for him, or anything like that. Any of the storylines they could have played up. You know, the worst thing that could have happened was for them to get beat in week one, and they're going to have to really get it together quickly here if they want to rally and make this season, you know, a typical Occidental season.
They do host Puget Sound coming up here in week two. Then they have 2 weeks off before they host Whittier in the conference opener. The SCIAC teams are restricted to playing just 9 games by conference rule, so spreading 9 games out over 11 weeks means there's 2 byes, and for Occidental, that's back-to-back at a time where, they might need it. You know, and then to end our review of week one on a bright note, congratulations to Crown, a UMAC team beating an MIAC team and beating a team that, you know, I'm not sure what kind of year they were going to have this year. I think we picked them to be 3-5 in the league, so we didn't think they were going to be world beaters. But, you know, for Crown to come up with a win like that at home against Carleton is just a gigantic win for that program.
And kind of leads you to wonder, you know, Carleton was a team just two years ago in 08 was 7-3 and 5-3 in the MIAC. So, you know, they were a team that was sort of on the rise, slid back to 3-7 last year. And then, to start off with a loss to Crown, it sort of makes you wonder what kind of program that's going to be going forward. But definitely a big win for the UMAC. Pretty much the biggest win by a UMAC school that I can think of, except for maybe Northwestern Minnesota a year or two ago beating River Falls.
Coming up next week, Mount Union gets on the field for the first time there at University of Wisconsin Oshkosh. Keith, we didn't really talk a whole lot about Oshkosh Central, but you know, with Oshkosh having a game under its belt, now having a home game, Mount Union having to travel, Mount Union starting a new quarterback, is there any chance that Oshkosh can pull off the upset?
Boy, I hate to say there's no chance. I never like to say that. But, I mean, it's Mount Union. It's, you know, the only advantage I think Oshkosh has, you mentioned it, Pat, having that game under the belt. I know coaches really think there's a big difference between that first game, just getting those jitters out and just working out the kinks offensively, defensively, special teams, you know, getting everybody lined up correctly, all down the line. And Oshkosh is going to have that under their belt. But I think also when it comes to Mount Union, by the time you get to you know, first string at Mount Union, you've played some JV games already, and you're going to be used to dealing with jitters already and pressure, I think. So having that first game jitters, I don't know if they affect you quite as badly there at Mount Union because, you know, you a lot of these kids wait so long to break into the starting lineup. That they're sort of tested already by having worked their way up through the JV and having small roles. Long answer to a short question. Does Oshkosh have a chance? I don't know if they have much of one, but certainly it's better than Mount Union opening up against some of the teams that they've ended up opening up with over the past year, you know, several years.
Fourth ranked Linfield gets on the field for the first time in a playoff rematch and, you know, probably a playoff preview against Cal Lutheran, two West Coast teams almost undoubtedly set to match up in the first round, whether those will be Linfield and Cal Lutheran, who knows. But the champions of the Northwest and the Skyac always seem to end up with each other pretty early on in the postseason, and they will get a first look at each other on Saturday. Fifth-ranked St. Thomas hosts Wisconsin River Falls. Number six, Mary Hardin-Baylor goes to Wisconsin La Crosse. Keith, the one of the games we didn't talk about, but the whole American Southwest versus WEAC thing was kind of driven home with East Texas Baptist went to Wisconsin La Crosse on Saturday and won 33-20.
Yeah, and that's a pretty big win for East Texas Baptist, and sort of, again, calls into question what kind of team La Crosse is going to be this year, because there's been years when they've been right there. You know, during this Whitewater run, La Crosse has been the team that gives Whitewater its greatest push. And then there's been years where La Crosse has had these big early season games and played teams from Texas. I think a couple years against Hardin-Simmons, you know, they went down there and beat up on Hardin-Simmons. And now you look at this game and to see East Texas Baptist go to La Crosse and win. It's certainly an eye-opener.
Seventh-ranked Central at Augustana. We have, of course, the Pac-Mac Challenge on Saturday, and the centerpiece game there is 10th-ranked Delaware Valley hosting number 21, Washington and Jefferson. The Willamette moves itself up in the polls, and they make another long trip. So it's number 13 Willamette at number 14 Hardin-Simmons on Saturday, Keith.
Yeah, that should be as fun as they get at this point in the season in Division III. And, you know, we talk about those teams being on geographic islands up there in the Pacific Northwest and in Texas, and they sort of schedule whoever will schedule them. But for us, you know, we're the big winners in that one because we get to see another early season clash between two top 25 teams.
19th-ranked Johns Hopkins makes its 2010 debut there at Randolph-Macon. Number 15, Thomas Moore, is at Hanover. And then some other games involving two unranked teams, but still of interest. Redlands at East Texas Baptist. DePauw hosts Rose Hullman. North Carolina Wesleyan at Hardin-Simmons. And Dubuque is at Wisconsin Platteville in the Mississippi River rivalry. I included that in our rundown because I wanted to tell this story. I was just talking to a guy this past week who used to play for the Chicago Bears, not a D3 guy, but, you know, just a guy who had who's some of his exposure to Division III was having Chicago Bears camp at Platteville, and what a joy it was for the Bears players on the night when they got to go out and they had a night off that they went to Dubuque, which was apparently the jumping nightlife from when you're coming from Platteville, Wisconsin.
Well, that's funny. One other thing we should mention in week one, we did, you mentioned Puget Sound getting a victory. We didn't get the chance to mention who they played. They played Pacific, beat them 36-19. Pacific's revived its program and back on the
field.
So
welcome back, Pacific, and they will get another chance at Puget Sound later in the season when Menlo dropped out of Division III. Puget Sound dropped them from their schedule, and picked up the game against Pacific, who'd only had 9 games scheduled. So they will see each other again at Puget Sound on October 30th. Pacific, has 2 weeks to look over that video and see what they want to figure out, including how to kick some more of those 14-yard field goals. And we hope to have more information on that as the week progresses and maybe get video for you. Speaking of video, one of the things we are doing this year is we're going to do a video play of the week. So if you're a player and you have highlights from this past week on YouTube, if you're a coach, somebody who has access to video, send us a link. If you've posted it yourself, send us the big honkin' file. If you want us to post it, either way, we'll be fine with that. And then at some point in the middle of the week, probably not as early this week because of the holiday, probably late Tuesday or early Wednesday, and then it'll be earlier in the week in future weeks. We will pick the play of the week. We'll throw it on the front page, and everybody can take a look at what you guys did. I think we kind of, Keith, you and I really enjoyed when ESPN did the hidden video thing from their Thursday night game at halftime, where they took a bunch of small college highlights and put them up there. And I think we sort of missed that, and we're going to try to give a Division III play each week a little more exposure.
Yeah, in this day and age, there's no reason why you can't. A lot of schools are doing it. A lot of people take their own video and put it on YouTube. And, we're sort of the clearinghouse for everything else in Division III, so we might as well be for video.
You can follow Keith on Twitter at D3Keith. You can follow D3Football.com on Twitter at D3Football. I got to find a way to say that without having to say at twice in a row. Keith's Around the Nation column appears later this week, and don't forget to stick around. We have Statistical Spotlight on Monday, Around the Region columns on Tuesday and Wednesday, and a very special Around the Region column out of the Northeast this week, which is one you'll want to check out. He's Keith McMillan. I'm Pat Coleman, saying so long for the Around the Nation podcast.